when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
So you get your confidence up, you build your confidence. Don't leap in, don't run before you can walk. Just start slow, get your confidence going, you know.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're back speaking with Kate Hill, a professional buyer's agent, seasoned investor, and qualified property investment advisor with Advisable. In this episode, learn about the skills she's developed through her investments, her tips and tricks to educating yourself and conditioning your mindset, and what the near future looks like for Hill. As she discusses in the last episode with us, Hill has developed new skills after her first investments didn't go to plan.
I'll tell you skill number one, again, segueing from a previous conversation, is buy in better locations. So, where your properties actually grow in value and you can leverage of the equity in that. So, which is basically what then happened, you know. So, from Kate perspective, cataclysmic event in Gladstone, I did buy another couple of properties. So I had five at that point. One in the Perth market, which has held remarkably well, actually. and another one nearer to Brisbane in Queensland. And they grew very. I bought them at a good time in the cycle. You know, I had a really nice upswing. I completely did my research differently. I felt I was, I'd moved back to Sydney by this point as well. So my work was more secure. My husband's work was more secure. I was less nervous about cash flow and thinking, right, I need to compensate as well for what might have been happening in Gladstone. But I needed to make sure that the growth, you know, learning that you can have the best cash flow in the world, but you need growth as well. Otherwise, why do this?
She's a fan of the buy and hold strategy, particularly for early investments.
And that's how I wanted to begin. I didn't want to start with something too full of, you know, you're going to make hundreds of thousands in 10 minutes. I don't have that kind of risk profile. I never have. And it was definitely my strategy in the first, and still is to an extent. I think everyone should have some bread and butter, rather boring, perhaps even unsexy, buy and hold properties in their portfolio just as a foundation. I would never recommend leaping in there with something, you know, high risk, allegedly high return. I rarely see that happen successfully with first-time investors, and especially in this climate as well, with the banks not lending anyone any money. I really wanted to set and create a foundation of solid buy and hold, long-term buy and hold, that would then be the step-off point for doing other things.
Definitely.
So
the properties, as you mentioned, been scattered all across Australia. You've got one in Perth, Brisbane.
Four in Queensland, one in Victoria, one in Adelaide. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And do you plan to buy anything sort of locally in Sydney where you're currently living at the moment as well?
Well, isn't that, how long have you got? $64,000 question, Tyrone. Yes and no. So professionally, we are looking as advisable buyers agency, and we're buying homes for people here. You know, yes, absolutely, because people will always want somewhere to live. From an investment perspective, I'm sure everyone out there will be aware that the Sydney market boomed, as it does, you know, every decade, once a decade-ish, boomed in the past 3 or 4 years. It's coming off the boil, retracting slightly in some suburbs. I don't think there's a great rush to be in the Sydney market here. I think one has time to see how, you know, the next 12 months or so is playing out. But I do like to get ahead of the game with these things. So we at Advisable are definitely preparing and gearing up for purchasing investment properties for clients here in Sydney too. But you really do have to pick your location. It's going to depend on, and I'd say that about any area really, but just because of Sydney having boomed, you know, it's the Brisbane market is different. The Adelaide market, there's so many property markets out there. They all do different things for different reasons at different times. And there are certain suburbs in Sydney that will continue to have good, solid growth. But can you afford to buy there? You know, we then consider what's going on out the west, you know, with the new airport coming. And so consider the area, consider the yield, you know.
While buying Sydney is in her sights, Hill is in no rush.
Absolutely. Buying in Sydney, absolutely. Buying in Melbourne, definitely. You know, is there a rush to do that? Probably not.
As a buyer's agent and investment advisor, Hill describes a typical client and what she attempts to do for them.
It's like I said earlier on, I learned the lesson myself by doing it myself, of really getting to the grips of what is the right thing for the client at any particular time. So I might have or Alex, or, you know, any one of us might have clients who are, let's say, a young couple with two or three kids in school, ballet, soccer, you know, both parents, let's say, to be a complete horrible stereotype, one parent is part-time, the other parent is self-employed, and there's not a lot of spare cash going on in that family. And let's say they only have $350,000 to spend. So it's considering what is the most appropriate investment for that family, for that situation, and risk profiling them also. So we want to make sure that they sleep at night. I don't want them lying awake at 3 a.m. like me when my rent dropped $280 a week. Losing sleep over, you know, any part of this process. It's not risk-free, of course, ever. But they need to sleep at night. I need to know what kind of tenant demographic they're comfortable with. What cash flow, of course, they are comfortable with, age of property, all these kind of things. And then we need to make the best, and we match that with making the best investment decision area-wise that we can. And, you know, if $350 is a good amount, if they've got $350,000 to spend, then what's the best area that we can afford for them to buy a great property in? You know, that meets the demand, the local demand. All these things have to align.
However, not all clients are the same. So she gives another example.
I could also any of us could have a client where, you know, cash flow is just not an issue. They're high income earners. They're able to borrow a larger amount of money. They might already have properties in their portfolio. So, you know, we diversify. We look at other areas. At Advisable here, we're licensed in 4 states at the moment. You know, we're increasingly becoming more and more aware of WA as well. I've travelled over there again just to get ahead of the game with that market coming into recovery. So I keep saying the same thing to everyone here really, but it's not a cookie cutter approach. Every client is different. They have a different risk profile. They have different levels of money to spend. You know, they have, again, we're coming back to dealing with human beings, people. They have fears. They have goals. So we never pigeonhole anyone into, you know, this is the only property to buy and this is the only location to buy in right now. That's absolutely not how we work. And because I'm not selling anything, it's not like I'm saying these are the properties I have for sale. Which one do you want? We find out who the client is, as I said, all that other stuff. How much can they spend? What's their risk profile? Okay, well, let's go and find what you need. Make the best investment decision for you personally.
Hill explains why she started and has continued to build her investment portfolio and why she has built her business.
The why has, I would say, never changed. It's always to make sure that me and my little family here are okay in the next 10 to 15 years. My husband, on a personal level, my husband's a little bit older than I am. So I always have, I'm sure he won't mind me telling you that. And he, I have that in mind. So we need to be in a position at a certain time in his and our lives where he doesn't have to work. You know, it gives us options. So to create as much net income, as a net wealth, that gives a level of passive income where we can afford for him to have that option. So, and that continues to be our why. It's been my why from day one, to create a level of income that means we don't have to worry. That's the biggest why to me that there is from an investment point of view. Building the business is to continue to do, again, I know this sounds really corny, but to continue to do what I love doing. I think what we do for ourselves in terms of property investing, you know, as property investors out there, is very, very powerful. The fact that we are able to take control of that and provide for our own futures. There are so many millions of people out there who aren't in a position to do that. And I feel very fortunate. It's very, very satisfying. I find what we do at Advisable very rewarding, that we help people on that journey. I know it sounds corny, but I do genuinely mean it. I get a huge satisfaction from helping people on this journey. And it helps me sleep at night. Never mind anyone else. Helps me sleep at night, knowing that we're doing the right thing for people, that we're helping them, you know, create this wealth over time that will put them in a really strong position and they don't have to worry for them, for their children, etc. That's why I build this business.
Fantastic. Excellent. That's really good to hear. I guess coming back to your initial journey when you purchased your first property, which we didn't really delve into too much detail, but wouldn't mind sharing a little bit more. Was there anything initially holding you back from buying that first one besides 2 years of of procrastination study?
Absolutely, love. I'll say it would probably be the same thing that's holding 85% of people back out there listening, and fear. It's just fear. It's fear of losing everything. It's fear of losing. It's fear of making a mistake. It's the big, you know, fear of financial loss. It's the only way I can sort of honestly put it. You know, that. It was all what was going to help hold me back. I also find that, you know, in my history of dealing with people who invest, there is often one driving force in a couple. You know, one's keen, the other one is probably keen too, but perhaps less involved. So, you know, if you're the driving force behind the investments that you're making and the strategy, there can be, you know, that added little bit of pressure of, oh God, what if I get it wrong? It's the fear of financial loss. That's what holds people back.
Going on from that, Hill explains how she would support a couple, like she mentioned, with one partner less keen than another.
I never push anyone into anything ever, obviously. So, and as I say, there's often people will know, as I did, people know that they kind of need to do something. You know, there's this thing in the back of your mind that says, oh God, I should do something. I know I need to be doing more. I've got all this equity, or I've got cash, or, you know I need to do something. But I'm fearful, or my partner's not, she's even more fearful, or he's even more fearful. You know, so it's really just sitting down with them, talking through what we do, showing them past examples of what we have done. Reassuring them that I'm not, they are the decision makers. All I do really is facilitate and advise, right? So I will, the three of them, we all do the same thing. It's reassuring people that while it's never risk-free, we do everything we can to mitigate the risk of things happening. And that starts right from the start with the risk profiling, our area choice, making sure that they are never beyond their comfort zones. But we do still need to make a really good investment decision, right? So it's a balancing act, because again, I don't want them doing what I did. I wouldn't do that for anyone else ever, obviously. But buying somewhere and having a great yield, but it's never going to go any. It might never go anywhere. There has to be growth there.
Another approach is encouraging clients to be realistic about their fears.
Just sitting down and explaining to people what the actual risk is. That's another thing. So people have this, this fear in their minds, as I did myself, of, oh God, I'm going to lose everything. The chances of that actually happening are, gosh, so remote. But that comes down to having the right loan structure as well. Looking at how you're spending your cash or your equity, and explaining what the level of risk is you're actually taking, and then running through what would actually have to happen for you to lose everything, which is your fear. What actually has to happen? Something cataclysmic would need to happen to the eastern seaboard of Australia for that to actually happen, and how likely. Right. So it's running through the actual, well, let's think this through, your fear. I never dismiss anyone's fears. They're genuine. And I need people to be happy. I need to have happy clients. And then we have a happy Kate. they've engaged with me for a reason. They want to do something. So, but I can, you sense the fear. So it's talking them through what an actual risk is, what it is that we do, how we mitigate against those risks. And then helping them through the process, start to finish.
Coming up after the break, we'll learn Kate Hill's tips to educating yourself.
Really, any investment book that you can get your hands on, have a read of it. I don't think you can ever really read enough of these.
Some of her best investment advice.
When you invest in property, it's going to cost you money, right?
Followed by the next steps in investment and career journeys.
I'd say the potential and the possibilities to be able to do more developments.
All this and much more after the break. I'm Tyrone Shum and you're listening to Property Invest Story. While Hill recommends education and reading, she warns people to be aware of where they get their information from.
Genuinely, it would be hard pushed to pick like a single publication, but I recommend reading. When I say as much as you can, be discerning with your reading. And by that, I mean, any investment book that you can get your hands on, have a read of it. I don't think you can ever really read enough of these. There are, be mindful though, as you're doing that, what that particular author's or that publication's agenda is what I will also say. Remember, especially at the moment, and it's a big pet peeve of mine, in the press, we're reading a lot about, 1 minute it's the property bubble, then the next minute it's the property crash. We get some economist from the US who's selling his latest book over here, who's predicting a 50% price drop, and it puts the fear of God into people. Just always be mindful what that person's agenda is, what their qualifications are. I find that really the level of reporting, if I can call it that, in the press, mostly about real estate, is nonsense, quite frankly. I know it sounds very arrogant, but it is. These publications rarely consult with actual real estate professionals who are out there. They simply regurgitate somebody's press release that has no basis on fact. And again, because it's all about clickbait, it's, you know, because the newspapers aren't paying for actual, or we're not paying to read content anymore. So these publications don't have the money to pay, you know, proper journalists to go and research and write good content. It's all about, you know, advertising and getting clicks, you know, click-through rates. So, and the only way to do that is to report on the property crash, you know, that's looming. So that's what's going to get 50,000 people clicking on it in the next 5 minutes, which means they sell more advertising. And people out there, I don't think, realize that the bulk of what they read about real estate is nonsense. Sorry, again, I know that sounds really arrogant, but
it's the truth and the facts behind it. And the whole idea behind people or the media tapping into your fears is because they want to be able to get you to click on it to read the article so they can put more advertising behind it. And it happens all the time, unfortunately.
So be mindful of that is what I would say. Read as much as you can. Take it all with a pinch of salt, certainly in the press, about what you know, where that's coming from and who's writing it and what are their qualifications and have they actually talked to a real estate expert.
He'll share some of the best advice she's received on her property journey.
Not to sweat the small stuff too much, right? Not to freak out about paying $150 for a mortgage registration document. You know, when you invest in property, it's going to cost you money, right? Just accept that fact. It's going to cost you money. And I guess aligned with that is, and this might sound a little bit self-serving, and I actually don't mean it this way, but don't be afraid. In fact, I encourage you, pay for good advice. You know, there is no such thing as a freebie out there. If it's free, you'll be paying for it somehow, right? Somehow. If you pay for the actual advice on a fee-for-service basis, there is a high chance that that person advising you does actually care about you and your circumstances. If the advice is free, it's not advice, it's sales, and they will be making their money elsewhere. So pay for good advice, pay for good qualified advice. Check out people's, what those qualifications are. Who is selling you what and why? How are they getting paid? That's, you know, and at the same time, don't sweat the small stuff about paying, for example, for a good solicitor or a good conveyancer. If you've got a complicated transaction going through and that solicitor is going to cost you $2,000, but they're going to get the deal through and it's going to, you know, not make your blood pressure go through the roof, please pay for good advice and don't skimp on it and go to some online e-conveyancing service for $150 where you're going to end up doing all the work and it can scupper the deal. Don't sweat the small stuff.
She shares some of her personal habits that she believes most contribute to her success.
I'm going to sound like a broken record here. Reading. Really just staying on top of what's going on out there. Again, lesson number two that I learned when I got my phone call from Gladstone? You know, stay on top of what is going on, not just with your own investment properties, but just generally in the market. Tune in to great podcasts, Tyrone. Tune in to, again, but run by quality, you know, people who are experts, who are out there doing it. So reading, staying on top of what's happening with my own properties and investments, but also generally, make time each week to stay on top of your admin. You know, it sort of sounds a bit, I don't know, trite, I guess, but stay on top of, you know, the statements that you get from your property managers, know what's going on with your properties, maintain them so that your tenants want to stay. Don't skimp on maintenance items. It will bite you in the bum when you want to sell it because you're going to have me at the other end of that transaction going, why should I pay X amount for this property when the landlord hasn't bothered to, you know, keep things in good repair? So yeah, turn into advice session there.
It's good.
It's just things I would recommend. People forget that you know, they don't want to spend money on the property. It's going to cost you money to maintain it. It's the tenants, you know, if you maintain it well, the tenants are more likely to look after it well. They'll want to stay, you know, and it will be in a better condition when you want to eventually sell it. So, people forget that. And charge market value rent. That'd be the other thing. Sorry if I've got 2 seconds to throw that one in.
Hill is also a big fan of swimming, something she believes also conditions her mindset.
I love doing a good ocean swim around Coogee Wedencake Island, about 3 kilometres. The training for that, I find ploughing up and down the lanes at the local pool, I find it quite meditative, you know, so there's a lot you can sort out in your mind while you're doing 50 laps up and down. It's senses of achievement, you know, when you're out there, when you're coming from London, where there's, you know, you need to get in a car and drive for 2 hours to get to AC, I won't call it the ocean, and then you've got to consider whether you'd actually ever get in because it's a shipping channel and it's breathing. So having the opportunity to be able to do these swims out here in challenging conditions sometimes, I just get a great sense of achievement from it, and I love being out there. It's just a wonderful opportunity. But, you know, coming back to the training, it's I guess you could equate it a little bit to property investing in terms of it. You know, you've got to push through. You've just got to keep going. You know, it's going to get hard at certain points when a big wave comes at you. You just have to navigate it the best way you can, and then you get over it and you carry on. You know, now that I think of it, it's just popped into my head.
yeah, because I was going to say, if swimming in the ocean is not like swimming in a pool. You've got so
no,
many
it
different.
Is not. And no, it's not.
How do you mentally train that? Because anything could be happening around there.
It's again, everything comes back to real estate with me. It's experiencing, you know, starting small. So don't start with the Coogee Wedencake Island swim in November when it's cold and quite rough. You know, start with a little 1 kilometre more sheltered swim so you get your confidence up. You build your confidence. Don't leap in. Don't run before you can walk. Just start slow. Get your confidence going, you know. Otherwise, I think you put it off because, you know, you have this fear of, oh, God, I've got to do this 3 kilometre swim around Wedencake Island at Coogee. You're never going to do it, you know. But if you go, okay, well, I'm just going to do this little 1K swim, which to some people is still a challenge, and I don't mean to, you know, diminish that achievement in itself, but that's a much more manageable thing to do. So, you know, I'd say, and you don't leap in with a multiple dwelling property development, you know, as the first thing that you ever do. I just wouldn't recommend it. It's a big thing. You're taking a big risk there, and you don't have the experience to deal with the challenges that are going to get thrown at you, like being out in the ocean. You need the skills. You need to develop experience and skills to deal with the different conditions of what you're doing. So, and until you've actually been out there and done it, you really don't know what they, you know, you can read for the next 3 years about, you know, what it's like to swim around Wedencake Island at Coogee. But until you actually do it, you really don't know how you're going to manage the challenges, whether you do manage the challenge. You might be the one that puts your hand up and gets towed in by the water safety people because it's all too much. You know, if you're knee deep in a property development, what are you going to do? You know, it's harder to bail out. So without, you know, considerable financial loss. So I'd start small and build on a solid foundation rather than, you know, try and run before you can walk.
If Kate Hill met herself 10 years ago, she'd have this to say.
Start 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, I'd go back another 10 years and go, start now, do it now.
So if you met yourself 20 years ago.
20 years ago, start now, Kat, start now. I know you've got no money, but start now.
In the next few years, Hill is most excited to expand her portfolio with development.
I'd say the potential and the possibilities to be able to do more developments. So I, just as another shout out to Alex, you know, I'd hand him all my money and say, here, go and double my profits, please. To do some small scale developments to turbocharge the building of equity that I'm aiming for. Yeah. So, stepping sort of further beyond the long-term buy and hold strategy, and you know, going into something that my risk profile has been for a while now. It's just, you know, when you start a new business, which was of course a few years ago now, but when you start a business, the banks go, whoa, I'm not going to lend you any money for a little while. So, you know, while I'm on hold, considering what the next steps are, and that was definitely to do some developments to make some really more exciting money.
With her early investment troubles, Hill doesn't feel like she had too much luck.
Looking at my actual experience and the way that my decision making improved from the early days, I'd say I've relied very little on luck. I've had very little luck. But I do know people who have been lucky, if that makes sense. So there will have been people out there. So personally, I'd say I don't rely on luck, and certainly not anymore. I wasn't aware that I ever relied on luck, and I don't think success that I've had has been because of luck. It's been because I've learned from my mistakes. So it would be more because of skills, experience, you know, and don't ever do that again, Kate. do that differently next time. But I do know people who have been lucky, who have bought, you know, in Sydney in 2012, just, you know, that's when they chose to do it. And they readily admit they had no idea what was going on in the Sydney market. That is just when they happened to buy, and their property doubled in value in the next 3 years. So those people have been lucky, and bloody great. Good luck to them. You know, why not? You know, some people need to be lucky. That's fantastic. So, and I do know that that happens, but the reverse happens too.
Yes.
You know, ever rely on luck. Do your research.
All right. Well, Kate, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today. We'll end by letting the audience know what's the best way they can connect with you.
Yep. So my phone number is 0404-117-477. Email is kate@advisable.com. So kate@advisable.com.au. And there's also our website, advisable.com.au, where you can send your inquiries through.
Thank you again to Kate Hill for joining us on this episode of Property Invest Story. If you want to hear more about her journey, then visit our website at propertyinveststory.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.